here's a question. Does your national anthem give you goosebumps or push you to choose between a political identity and a deeper human identity? Earlier this hour, we asked the question looking particularly at the migration crisis out of the Middle East, but also at other deep changes afoot in the world, and asked, what are we seeing right now? Unlike so many of the watershed events in world history, fall of the Roman Empire, the Soviet Empire, French Revolution, Mao takes over China, Vietnam War ends, the 9/11 attacks, what we see now is an intense but murky swirl of technological change, political disruption, institutional dysfunction, it seems, stalled political leadership around the world, poverty, extreme wealth, gender influx, a pope from no nation throwing out the rule book in a secular world and becoming perhaps the most important leader in this new century. I could go on, but I won't. What are we seeing? Who better to start our series and our discussion of this than Pulitzer Prize-winning Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudunn? Welcome.
Great to be here.
Their book, A Path Appears, Transforming Lives, Creating Opportunities, is now out in paperback. Even that seems obsolete, paperback. The world is changing so much.
Although paperback sales are actually up this year and ebook sales down a little
bit so far this year. What are we seeing? And you're talking about a challenge to institutions, sovereign nations, at a very ground level in your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the changes that we're seeing is that globalization connects the problems in one country much more quickly to those in another. And so you have Ebola in Liberia, and quickly you have Ebola in a lot of other places in the world. You have problems in Syria, and soon you have problems in Europe. And I think one of the traditional problems that we've not been very good at addressing is these kind of strategic issues. And, you know, we always are much more willing to fund a pound of cure than an ounce of prevention. I hope that one of the lessons of this right now is going to be the importance of addressing problems early on, whether they be Ebola in West Africa, whether they be Syria unraveling, 200,000 Syrian refugees in Jordan getting completely cut off food aid in ways that are going to drive them to Europe. And in this country, we do the same thing. We are very willing to fund criminal justice and very unwilling to fund early childhood education, which will reduce the need for that kind of spending. So, which is something we talk about in A Path Appears. So, I do think that problems are becoming very interconnected in ways that should impel us to try to address them earlier on.
But I see political institutions embracing the contradictions that you describe in your book, the insane contradictions, invest in this ridiculous thing and ignore this thing that's much more efficient. And people on the ground picking up and taking the initiative on their own. It seems to me that if you look at the Syrian civil war or the breakdown of financial system, political institutions, and with the exception of the Federal Reserve maybe, are not up to the task of this sort of thing.
That's exactly what we see, that the role of the individual is far more important now than it has been in the past few decades. We, as individuals, you know, citizens here in the U.S., used to think that, oh, well, the institutions, they run by themselves. They function on their own. I mean, you know, they don't need any help from us. But that's actually not true. We do see the breakdown of these institutions. And institutions, of course, are run by people. And so that's why it's really important for individuals to see how they can play a role in, you know, changing attitudes and reshaping some of the roles that these institutions have had. These institutions have to be more flexible. They have to change and grow. But I don't think that right now our structure is allowing for it, partly because individuals aren't really saying that they care.
But there are so many contradictions in the world, and in South Asia particularly, many have asked the question, why doesn't this explode? And what instead happens is it coexists in this bizarre sort of way that is dysfunctional, but there's not the kind of conflict that we would imagine from, you know, 1789 and the French Revolution.
I mean, but partly that's because indeed there is progress. And I would push back a little at the idea that everything is dysfunction. You had a guest on earlier talking about the 60% improvement in child mortality since 1990. Since then, the number of kids, primary school age kids who are out of school have gone from 100 million to 60 million. So, poverty worldwide, extreme poverty has diminished. So on some of the issues that matter most in the world, there really has been some progress from institutions, albeit those that are pretty fragile, pretty frail, often prone to corruption. I think in South Asia, for example, you are seeing a backdrop of a certain amount of progress that relieves some of that pressure.
But Cheryl, is there a collision between the hope that's represented by some of those epidemiological and public health statistics And this idea that we're seeing in the migrant crisis and in statistics like, you know, a billion people don't have access to clean water, that, you know, okay, you live to five. But beyond that, you know, the economy of the world doesn't have that much necessarily to offer. And so there are going to be huge numbers of displaced people emotionally.
I don't think there's a collision. I mean, I don't think that they are sort of targeting each other, sort of the progress of science versus the particular institutions. I think that they realize that they have to coexist, and that the progress that we have in healthcare around the world, both, you know, abroad and here, I think that's really important. And that's continuing. I mean, there's a relentless march, which is fabulous, because there are great inventions that are taking place. There are scientists who are really dedicated to, you know, bringing about innovation and change. On the other hand, institutions to deal with migration. We don't really have these great institutions. We also don't yet have sort of a groundswell here in the U.S. of people saying, wait a second, you know, we really should play a role in this migration crisis, and force our institutions to say, wait a second, maybe we should, you know, take some more, you know, refugees.
Maybe we already have with the Iraq invasion. I mean, you know, there is that.
There is some of that, but I think that it's, you know, obviously this is a fluid situation and it's ongoing. I mean, I think that's not something that, you know, individuals or Americans can say, okay, well, we've made a decision on that and therefore, you know, we can move on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a constantly changing environment.
Well, it's so interesting how immigration may be the issue that challenges world governance to work in the way that war and, you know, conflict resolution actually hasn't worked in our time. Getting back to your issue, though, of individualism for a second, it seems like that's a particular challenge, an explosive one in China, that the more individuals who come out in the middle class and say, oh, we're going to do things ourselves, the more potential that has for global destabilization if things don't go right in China.
Well, right now, I think that it is very well kept in check. I think that the government in China and the Communist Party in China is very, very keenly aware that they don't want things to get out of control. And President Xi Jinping has been masterful in using nationalism to rally the Chinese behind his vision of China, which is very different from his predecessors. I mean, it is not clear that the U.S. and China is in a sort of harmony between the U.S. and China is a key part of his vision. His vision is a strong China. And I think a lot of Chinese can get around that. So obviously they do care about other things like the pollution. They want the government and the party to really, you know, clean up that country. And so there are individuals who are trying to work towards, you know, making that occur faster, and they are protesting the pollution. But
who works inside the system and who works outside the system, that's really the key to
where
things go forward.
Well, most of them, I think the change right now is through the system and not outside of the system, because you'll just be crushed at this point. And I don't think there are too many individuals who are going to take to the streets at this moment. I mean, they have lots of small protests in the countryside by farmers against corruption.
But it's certainly the big story of this century, certainly, however it turns out. Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wood-Dunn, their book, A Path Appears, Transforming Lives, Creating Opportunities, is now out in paperback. And you can hear anything on today's program. Just go to thetakeaway.org or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm Ira Flatto, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.